Once again, is our y'all's prayers this evening. Desire the Lord to help me get the thought out that I feel like if we have for this evening. What I wrote on the board is toward Sodom. So I'd like to start off reading in Genesis chapter 13, starting in verse 1. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, under the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, and under the place of the altar which he had made there at first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was very well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Now, this is just a story. We've all read it before. It's talking about the natural growth. The Lord had been blessing them. They'd had lands. They'd had cattle and things. And the land just wouldn't support the two men. Wouldn't support the herds. So an offer was made to Lot. Hey, Lot, you pick. Go to the left. Go to the right. It's not a big deal to me. You pick whichever way you want to go, and I'll go the other way. Now, the plain of Jordan that's described here, well watered everywhere. Wouldn't it be nice if you're trying to water cattle if you knew that, you know, if I go this direction, I don't have to worry about digging wells. I don't have to worry about finding water. It's going to be easy to find. The grass is going to be good. And it also said it was like the garden of the Lord. Now, I've never seen the Garden of Eden, but I can just imagine some of the gardens we've been in, Diane and I have been in here on Earth. We like to go visit botanical gardens, and you go in some of those, and they're just beautiful. And I can just imagine, what would a garden the Lord put together look like? And so here is this plain that we have recorded as being like unto that garden, just wonderful. Like the fertile lands of Egypt. Now, the Israelites have not been, at this time in the story of the Bible, have not been captive yet in the land of Egypt. So Egypt to them was still a land. It was a fertile land. It was a place of prosperity. So this land was bountiful. It produced lots. And it was desired. Something you would look at with your eyes, and it was to be desired. And so Lot, he was to choose. This was his choice now. Now, Lot had traveled with Abraham. He had been with him on his journey so far since he had moved out. He had saw the blessings the Lord had had on Abraham. My assumptions are that no doubt he knew what Abraham's belief was, what Abraham understood from the Lord. But when it came time to make this choice, Lot chose with his eyes. So he began pitching his tent towards Sodom. And I stopped at verse 13 because I want us to take note. Sodom was already called out as an exceedingly wicked city before the Lord. So when he looked at the plain and looked at the beautiful land, the well-watered lands, he no doubt saw the ugliness of the towns there, the ugliness of the people. This shouldn't have come as a surprise to him. They were there. But when he started moving into the land, where did his tent go? It says he started pitching his tent toward Sodom. And toward means as far as, up to, unto. And most of the commentators agree that basically he went as far as Sodom. He went up, I'm going to say, right into the shadow of its walls. That's where he initially moved his tents to, because it did say he was pitching tents. And it got me to thinking, how close to sin do we truly want to live? How close to sin do we truly want to live? Do we flirt with it? Do we draw close to it? Do we look at the success, if you will, of the area around sin, where sin is rampant, and we think, that's a nice area. Yes, I know those people are doing things they shouldn't, but there's prosperity there. There's good over there. Are the benefits of being in a surrounding with sin worth what little bit of prosperity you would get? And thinking of Lot, do we convince ourselves that we're just going to camp there? We're just going to set up our tent here. I know it's close to this place of sin, but you know, it's maybe, we don't know where Sodom was at, but maybe it's in the middle of the plain, so it makes sense. If I put my tent here close to this city, I can come up with logic that says my animals won't have to go far to the different fields in the plain, and I can make some logic in my head for why it's okay to be this close to sin. It's going to be all right. I'm going to be careful. But we know from the story, before it was all said and done, where was Lot found? He wasn't living in a tent anymore, was he? He had established a permanent residence, a building with doors that could be locked. And where was this house at? It was in Sodom. Now, from what we understand of the Bible, he still held out for righteousness. He still, was trying to focus on what was doing right, but dare I say he was becoming more and more accepted to the folks in that evil place, and he was also starting to live more and more like those people. Even though he had not given up his righteousness yet, he had moved into their town, he had stopped living in tents. What kind of place was he finding himself in just because he was okay with moving towards Sodom? So I'd like to go to 2 Peter. Second Peter chapter 2. Let's read verses 7 and 8. Talking about the Lord. Actually, let's go ahead and read verse 6. And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that after should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. So we have a picture here of Lot, of what was going on, if you will, inside of Lot. He was vexed by the activity. So he was living in the wicked town, but he hadn't necessarily joined their activities. But how pleasant does it sound to live a life full of vexation? To live a life where you're constantly wishing your neighbors didn't act that way. You're constantly wishing that that the folks just would live right. They would do right. And what does vexed mean? Have we ever stopped to take the time to consider what does it mean to be vexed? Well, it means to tire down with toil, to exhaust with labor, to afflict or oppress with evil, to make trouble for, to treat roughly. Because of his choice to go toward Sodom and eventually into the city, Lot was being worn down with toil, worn down with troubles. It was wearing at him. Dare I say, if he would have continued to live there, if the Lord hadn't brought judgment on the place, the story of Lot may have been different. If he had stayed there long enough to truly get completely worn down and to give in, what would we have had for the story of Lot? But let's read here in verse 8, because I find there's some interesting words in here. For that righteous man dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Now if we read this, who is getting the blame for vexing Lot's soul? It says Lot. Lot was getting blamed for the vexation of his soul. He chose to go live into this area. He chose to stay there to look at what was happening, to try to put up with it. Now, we have hopes. I don't have any record that he actually preached in the town, but we do know when the angels were there and the men came to him, they understood that he was different from them. So maybe he was reaching out to save souls and be a preacher for his area. But it still is one of those things that he put himself in that predicament to be vexed, to just be worn down from the evil in the city and just tired of it. And he put his family in a predicament with him. This wasn't like he lived just outside the city or a short distance away and would go in on the evenings or maybe on a Sunday morning and preach to the people. His family was in this city. And if you think about the sorrow that he brought into his life because of this. So in some of the reading, there's estimates that he probably had four daughters, two sons-in-laws, and his wife. And we know from the story of when God sent judgment, how many of those family members made it out of the city? Just two of the daughters and his wife and Lot. And his wife perished. She looked back, drawn by the eyes, looking back, and she perished. So let's go back to Genesis, but this time chapter 19. Genesis chapter 19, starting in verse 27. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in the which Lot dwelt. Now I just wanted to stop here. So what did Lot have when he started moving toward Sodom? Did he have wealth, animals, herds, enough that Abraham and him had to separate? What does it sound like he carried out of the area? The entire plain, it said, was just smoke and fire. So any animals he would have had on the plain, gone. What did it say he carried of maybe the household goods he had stored up in his house out of the city? Did it say that how much they carried out of the city? What we do have record of is it seemed like he was reluctant to leave. He knew he should leave, but he was reluctant to. To the point the angels, it said, finally took him by the hand and in me adding some words here, drug him out of the city. Said, you really do have to go. You have to let this go. You become too attached to this place. What started off as a sore spot in a beautiful area, and you were focused on the beautiful area, you become attached to the sore spot now. You become attached to the ugliness, to the things that shouldn't be there. What is the cost of drawing close to sin? What is the cost of setting our direction towards Sodom, of looking towards where the sin's at? Let's look in Jude now, chapter 1. And starting in verse 21. Keep yourselves in the love of God, looking for the mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ unto eternal life, and of some having compassion, making a difference, and others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. Now, I jump to this because it starts off, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to keep ourselves in the love of God. How do you keep yourself in the love of God if you go draw close to sin? If you cozy up to it, if you start living right next door to it? You know, it talks about, if you will, firemen here. Others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire. A fireman may rush into a fire to save someone, but how long does a fireman intend to stay inside that fire? Does a fireman go up to a fire and say, you know what, I'm going to hang out here for a bit. The living room's not really on fire that much yet. I'll stand in here for a while, and then if it gets a little too warm in the living room, I'll mosey on maybe over to the kitchen. It's not really burning yet. Is that what a fireman does? Or does a fireman, he goes in there and he says, I need to identify if there's anybody in this house that needs to get out. Once I identify them, I'm getting them out. We're all getting out of the building. And then if it's safe, we'll go back in and try to save stuff. But if it's not safe, nobody goes back into the building. You know, sin is that burning building. You wouldn't say, well, I want to make sure everybody's all right, so I'm just going to hang out in this burning building. The fireman would tell you that's not wise. You want to get in and get out. You want to make sure you don't hang out there because it is going to get hot. The flames are going to continue to grow. I read in the news just, I think, this afternoon or yesterday morning, afternoon, I think it was, two firemen had a brick wall collapse on them in a, I think they were inside an auto body shop and they were trying to put the fires out and the brick wall collapsed on them. Now they were able to get out. But I guarantee you that their training says you don't go in there and hang out in that spot. You don't spend time close to the flames. You get in and you get out. You get in and you go get the people, the things you need, and you get out. You get back to safety. And the other part, talking about the garment spotted by the flesh. You know, that's a bit of an allusion to a diseased person. Leprosy, back in the day, if a person was leprous, you didn't want to even touch their clothes. You didn't want to run the chance of getting it on you. It didn't mean that you couldn't be nice and help the people, provide them food. But you wanted to be careful. How close did I get to this person? Did I share garments with them? No, why not? Because there's a danger. You're too close to the disease. You need to be careful. You know, we are supposed to reach out and save souls to work for Christ, but we don't want to be lost in that effort. We don't want to lose our souls. Let's turn to Luke chapter 17. Luke 17, verse 28. Says here, likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Here's a warning from Christ. This is Christ talking. He's saying, be careful. The world's going to show you a good time. It's going to show you there's plenty of food, there's social activities, successful business endeavors. There's wealth and prosperity. This is all here. Yes, there's evil around and there's these, but you know, you don't have to partake in that. Just don't tell me I can't partake in it. Just tolerate me and you can live here with us. That's really what was happening to Lot. But what is drawing our eyes? You know, we look at things sometimes, but do we consider the end of those matters? David said in Psalm 73, "But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped, for I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." Now, if we just stop there, it sounds like David was looking around and saying, you know, maybe I could loosen up on some things. Maybe it's all right because they seem to be blessed. The land's well watered. But we're not going to read it. But if you read on down through there, what does he eventually say? "But then I remembered the end. I remembered what God is going to do. I remembered the judgment that's going to come. And I was happy." Even here, he says, "Even then shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed." When God comes, all of the beautiful land, all of the blessings that appear to be here that the world's enjoying, it's going to be gone. Just like it's in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. Nothing for them to go back to. Do we get drawn to the things of the world? You know, our world today, they want to tell you how to think. They want to tell you how to act. They want to tell you how to do everything. And they really do want to control as much as the way that you do things. And we can get to looking at the way the world's going and what they're trying to do. And we can become vexed in our souls. Because we might be trying to kind of go that way. Instead of looking to the Lord and saying, "Okay, Lord, what would it have transpired, do you think, if Abraham and Lot would have said, well, tell you what, let's first go to the Lord. Let's ask him how to best settle this. Lord, what's the proper way for us to we know the land can't handle the animals. But what's the best way to divide this up? How do we handle that?" But instead, poor Lot started looking with his eyes, making his own decisions based off of human knowledge. We can allow ourselves to get drawn into things that we don't need to be drawn into. And if we really don't want to be drug out of the city by the angels, if we still have held on to our righteousness, we do well to consider, where have we started building our permanent abode? Abraham dwelt in a tent for a reason. Abraham dwelt in the tent because he was looking for a specific city. One whose builder and maker was God, wasn't it? He was looking for a city. Did Sodom fit that definition? But Lot had gotten his eyes off of what the goal was. And Lot had started seeing the beauty, no doubt, of the land. That's mentioned. He no doubt started seeing the prosperity in the city and said, "Well, you know, I can build here." And in the end, he lost everything. Romans 12 and 2. "And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." The world wants us to conform. If you don't believe so, and I don't want to bring up politics, but pick one side of the political argument and go find somebody with a sign for the other side and say something. You'll find out how fast they want you to conform to the way they think you ought to conform. But it's not just politics. There's all kinds of issues. The world is trying to say, this is okay now. In just the last election, there were gambling things that were passed. Listening on the news, there's places where more and more drugs are being legalized. This is okay. this is all right. Just accept it. We're not asking you to partake of it. We just want you to be okay with us doing it. We need to keep our minds focused on the Lord. It said to focus on what was acceptable and pleasing to God, what was His will. James 4:4. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Now, friendship with the world, have you ever thought that puts us at odds with our relationship with God, that it actually really puts us in a bad predicament? The terms adulterer and adulteresses are used to signify those that are faithless toward God. When God looks at you and says, you're drawing close to the world, you're starting to be a friend of the world, what does it mean to be a friend? Don't friends go and do things together? Eat together? Have enjoyable times together? Do you think the world would want to come to a church singing? Spend time with you? Or will your world instead say, you know what? You can do that on Sunday, but why don't you come to my house on Friday and we'll watch the game? And we'll root on the team that's going to go win the Super Bowl or the College World Series. Pick your sport. But you come and participate in my stuff. You can still do your stuff on Sunday, but come partake. How far do you go? I mean, we want to be friendly with the world to try to win them to Christ, but we need to be careful at how far do we go to be a friend of the world. Because it says if you're a friend of the world, you're what? Whosoever there will be a friend of this world is the enemy of God. It's pretty harsh language, but it's what's in the Bible. You can't sit the fence with the Lord. He wants you clearly on His side. Go to 1 John chapter 2. Starting in verse 15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. You know, we need to be very careful of the draw of the things of the world, of the way it pulls us in. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. What did it say Lot turned around and did? He turned around and he looked. He looked and he started seeing things that looked good to the eyes. Wow, that's a well-watered plain. Reminds me of what I've heard the people talk about the Garden of God looked like. And we just came up out of Egypt and we've seen the wonderful gardens and produce and everything there, and it looks just like that. And then beyond looking at it with his eyes, then the pride of life starts coming in. And you know, if I went that direction, my flocks, they're going to do well. They're going to be well fed. I'll be able to get good money for them. There's towns down there, lots of people in the towns. I can do commerce. I can be even wealthier than I am now. Is any of that wrong? Do you think the Lord doesn't want us to prosper? No, He wants us to prosper, but are we looking for how we can live for the Lord in that area? Or are we now starting to become more focused on how we benefit us? How we move closer to the world? Become more comfortable with it? We could say, but I want to be a friend to the world. I would say I would rather be friendly to the world to try to draw them to Christ than to truly be the world's friend. I think of some of the interactions Christ had with the Pharisees. I don't think they would have called him too friendly at times. He tended to speak pretty bluntly. But what was his goal? To win their friendship or to save their soul? He wanted them to understand, this is serious, people. You claim to be following my father's teaching. But you have moved too far. You've incorporated traditions of the world, traditions of men. You've moved past where you should be, and it's not acceptable. They had moved, if you will, too far towards Sodom. I would just challenge us all as we go into the week. Look at our lives. Look at what is it that draws your eyes? Look at where you're at. Are you surrounded by things that are vexing your soul? Is your mind just distraught? I realize in our world today we are going to live in the world and you know, pretty much be surrounded by the world. But you don't have to put your permanent dwelling in the world. You can remember that just like Abraham, we're travelers looking for that city of God. Yes, we live in LaRonge right now. But this is just our temporary home until the real house that he wants for us gets built. Y'all pray for me.